This is Using the Whole Whale, a podcast that brings you stories of data and technology in the nonprofit world. This is George Weiner, your host and the chief whaler of WholeWhale.com. Thank you for joining us. Games are tremendously powerful, and I think most of our interactions with them, come in the form of tiny little candies that we slide around and help companies make, billions of dollars crushing those candies. Today, I'm excited because we're talking with an organization called Games for Change, and Asi, the president there, has a lot of insight in how the field has developed and some of the amazing work being done around games that actually impact social change, make behavioral adjustments in the way we think about topics, and how those experiences can be designed. We're going to jump into an interview with Asi and find out how he thinks about the industry and the true impact that games can have. I'm here with the president of Games for Change, Asi. Can you introduce yourself and tell us a bit about what you do at Games for Change?
Sure. Thank you, George. Thank you for speaking with me. My name is Asi, and I'm running Games for Change almost for the last 5 years. And Games for Change is a nonprofit, and it's a nonprofit that is all about the positive power of video games. The idea that video games are not only kind of the media of the new generation, they're really, they have great attributes that traditional media doesn't necessarily have. And some of those could be really related to learning, education, and social change, really. And, we feel that it's untapped, and it was untapped for some time. And we're kind of moving the needle on how many more positive games and games that actually make a difference in the world are being published.
Interesting. So you're sort of like a convener. Can you talk a little bit about how you're actually helping this community, how you think about it, and what are the metrics you look for as you're trying to create more games that change?
Right. So that's a great question, because especially in the nonprofit world, how do you measure your success when you're not necessarily the one that is directly helping, an underserved community and can watch it at all times? We're, just like you said, we're much more of a convener, we're much more of the hub, and we're much more of a platform for others to shine. But over the years, we got pretty sophisticated on that. It took us 10 years. But what started as a conference, it grew up to be much more than that. So, we obviously measure how many people we convene together, and this is one of our best opportunities to bring the best work being done and to bring together people from different communities. So obviously we know how many people attend, how many people engage. But then we started to do curation. So, for example, every year, we choose the best games out there, and right now we have on our website more than 130 games, and we know how many people view them, how many people play them, and we're really trying to bring kind of the best work. So we're actually helping here the players, but we're also helping the developers, obviously, to get more eyeballs. Then another new thing we started recently is to do public arcades. So again, even though we're the convener, we're the hub, it's actually putting us in a great position to take out some work and put it in a physical location. So we did it with the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. We did it with USAID. We did it, obviously, with Tribeca in New York City. But the idea that we can actually get work and put it almost like on the street for people to access, it's almost like, to put it kind of to frame it, it's almost like moving from a place of advocacy and big slogans into a place that we're actually reaching consumers, we're letting developers reach consumers, and we have a very good idea on how many people we reach.
I love this. The idea of, look, we're going to get the players, we're going to get the creators, and we're going to get the nonprofits all together, helping them in unique ways and setting up these like pop-up arcades sounds brilliant. But, you know, like in my mind, I'm like picturing like Pac-Man fighting hunger and like, I don't get it, Ozzy. Can you give me an example of like how, you know, one of these games is actually making real impact in the world other than like giving me like a good time?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the it's interesting that you know, another thing that got much more sophisticated is also the the nature of the games. You know, at the beginning it was really kind of what you described, almost like let's take something that was really successful in real life, like in the commercial world, like Candy Crush Saga, and let's put it in a new skin, and it's going to be around donations. You know, but it's kind of, you know, the first level. So people started to be very sophisticated. They started to work with better game designers. So one example I want to give you is Never Alone. Never Alone is a game that this year is a nominee in two categories at Games for Change. And it was done. It's a pretty unique partnership between a company in New York, a game company, and nonprofit organizations that represent the tribes in Alaska, Native American tribes, and the nonprofit, you know, they kind of had a very clear mission of, can we connect our youth to the stories of our elders? Can we preserve the culture? Can we make it more? Can we give it the spice and the compelling nature of new media? You know, so you take something that is so old and so traditional and so deep in the culture, and can we put it in a video game? Huge success. And not only that, they sold real copies. I mean, the game just won a slew of awards, including the BAFTA last month. And it's a very, very compelling platformer with great music, great art.
You were just telling us about it's got great music, it's got great art. Can you talk a little bit more about the gameplay? What is the Never Alone game like? What am I doing?
Right, so you're playing two characters. You can play them as solo, or you can play them with someone else in kind of a co-play mode. You're playing a little girl, and you're playing a fox, which later on you discover that it has some magical powers. But the idea is that you're kind of going through the story, the real elder's story that is about the struggle of this little girl. And the struggle is around the enemies of the community, but it's also against the forces of nature, you know, the storm and the snow and the wind. And she goes and discovers how the storm is actually created, you know, by this giant hammering the snow mountain. And it's beautifully done. It highlights all those stories in a way that I think probably the people that commissioned the game didn't even imagine is possible. And, you know, there's something about that perspective that is something that, you know, you enter shoes that otherwise you wouldn't experience.
Yeah, so as we're talking about, you know, I get it. We're like going through this mystical landscape. I got a magical fox, so you know you're going to have a good time. What is some of the, like, as we move into evaluation, you know, like, nice, but so what, right? Like, that's nice, but so what? How does this particular game approach that?
Yeah, so in this case, it's definitely a game that is, you know, if there is a scale of how much preachy you are versus how much entertaining you are, it's definitely more on the entertaining side. And it's good to see those examples as well, you know, because we also have the other examples of kind of more like the broccoli examples. In this case, you know, what they did, for example, which is very smart, is they made you unlock documentaries, mini documentaries throughout the game. So one of their measurement is when you make progress in the game itself, you actually unlock those educational pieces and watch them. and they know exactly how many people complete them and how many people watch them, and they actually got great results by that. But they also added layers of traditional evaluation. So if you think about it, we treat those games as any other program. So you measure in whether it's pre and post, whether it's A versus B control groups. You can actually measure how people are influenced, what do they think, how does it change their perspective. This is a pretty new game, so I don't have the latest metrics. I'm happy to share metrics of other examples that have a bit more depth in the market.
I think that really helps to say, all right, look, you know, this is, you know, somewhere on a spectrum between, you know, really just entertaining versus preachy, right? Like just watch these documentaries, which, you know, no one's really going to sit there and watch them all. Can you talk a little bit more about, like, you know, why package it in a game? Is there something unique to a gameplay experience rather than some other dynamic to get people to watch, you know, documentaries to make a behavioral change afterward?
Yeah, so it's a great question, and a question that we're thinking about a lot, and it was one of the projects that we've done. So, you know, we said that we're a convener, but that was kind of, let's put a star next to it and say there was one exception that we worked with Nicholas Kristof and shared with Dan around Half the Sky and made a series of games. And that was a great example because there was a documentary. They wrote a book, a nonfiction book, and there were games. And then we could actually compare over time to what the games do that the other media doesn't. And again, it's not about being better. It's about being different, right? And sometimes we actually see that the full package is stronger than the sum of its parts, you know, that the components are actually making each other stronger. So the game living in a larger context is much stronger than if it was a standalone. More specifically, I would say that the game reached people that the other media didn't. Just by the nature of games, they reach audiences that are not necessarily going to be interested in the cause. So it's almost like reaching beyond the converted. And many people that came into the game After Sky never heard about the book or the documentary, didn't necessarily care about women issues. So you really came to people that just want to play a game and kind of got them into this and excited about this. You know, other things, I mean, the list is long, but I would say it's all about the fact that games are interactive and movies and books and stories are not. And what happens when it's interactive is that you're actually making decisions. You can understand consequences. You can play different roles. You're making the story. You're basically influencing it. And if it's a good game, you know, if it's not just a quiz that tells you this is right, this is wrong, if it's a good game, it actually gives you the boundaries. You know, it gives you kind of a sandbox to play in. And this is how the world is, right? The world is full of trade-offs. The world is full of tough decisions. It's not only about, you know, do this, don't do this. And this is great in games. You know, there are places to explore. There are places to test. There are places to fail, you know, safely. And that's why they're great, so great for learning and awareness because, you know, you don't have it in other media. You're telling some people, and here you're actually showing them.
So it sounds like, you know, when we embark down the should I create a game, the upside here is, look, you can expose yourself and your content to a new audience and also a whole other depth of experience. It's not passive, it's active. And when you're active, it sounds like you're talking about making decisions, consequences, provides this opportunity to fail, to test, and to learn at a unique level.
Absolutely. I mean... Second, everything we just recapped, I think it's also about what to me is very exciting about games. It's almost like it's an evolving medium. You know, it's still relatively young. And because of technology, it's just like what happens 2 years from now is going to be so different. You know, if we talked 5 years ago, the context was, wait, what, you want non-profits now to make games for, you know, PCs and compete with commercial companies? But in 2015, the context is No, everybody plays games. You know, people play on their mobile, people play on Facebook. Games become much cheaper to make. Distribution is becoming much easier. Indie game makers are coming along, and you know, you don't need necessarily a big company to make your game. So even those changes in the medium, I think, are working really, really to our benefit. You know, the idea that they're becoming more social, they're becoming more out there, they're becoming more connected to reality. You know, many nonprofits in our community are starting to explore the what wasn't there 5 years ago, but is in 2015 makes more sense, is how the virtual and the physical are connected. How can you make donations? But even more than that, you know, we have a game nominated this year that it's about heartbeats, and it's actually connected to your biofeedback from the heart. You know, the game itself is responsive to your heart rate. So you start to see those things that, to me, are even more exciting because they're breaking the screen and they're taking you out to the real world and to action, right?
Hello here. All right. So I'm a nonprofit and I want it. I want to start, you know, creating a game. I have no clue where to start. I feel like you've been talking about nominated for things. Is there some sort of conference that I could maybe check out?
Oh, good that you ask about it. So it's actually a great timing because our annual event is happening in April. It came a long way since it started. Now we're talking about a conference that is over 4 days. Three of those days are for professionals. So three of those days, when I say professionals, it's not necessarily game makers. I mean, more than 50% of our audience are actually coming from the nonprofits and education side. People that usually don't have experience with games. This is one thing that is kind of unique about this conference, that, you know, the people that are coming from games meet the people that are coming from the causes. And you need both to make a good project. The 3 days event, I mean, obviously you can look at online at Games for Change, the Games for Change Festival, but just to give you a few beats, you know, we're going to have the chief scientist of Oculus Rift talking about the future of virtual reality. We're going to have Nicholas Christoph talking about his experience with games. We're going to have Morgan Spurlock, you know, the filmmaker of Super Size Me, talking about media and impact. We're going to have game companies like the creator of Angry Birds coming to do a keynote, coming all the way from Finland to speak about how they moved into education and doing a lot in learning with Angry Birds. You know, just a few examples, but this is the type of thought leadership that we bring in. And then the fourth day is a public day. It's open to the public. It's part of the Tribeca Fair. And then it's not only 900 people, it's just thousands and thousands of families that are coming to this fair. And we own a street, literally we have a block, and we put games out there, and everybody can come. It's on the 25th, April 25th, and anybody can come and experience firsthand. And by the way, there we also do some non-digital, so there is a whole section of our community that are, you know, not necessarily doing things with technology, doing very interesting things with physical play. I can give you some examples, but the idea is really about, you know, people playing in the street.
All right. So I'll come out and say, Asi, we have a bit of a history. We've worked together. So is there any sort of discount I can get out of you for our audience?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. For many reasons, I would say yes, and I would love to, you know, to work offline and give you some code that will be very unique to the people who listen to your podcast and part of your community. Maybe even on your, we'll be able to send something, a message, and then it will give people, you know, at least 10% off the tickets and all the information they need. And, you know, again, I mean, this is our mission. Our mission is to spread the news and give people a good experience.
Awesome. So we'll have that on our site, and I'll cover that for folks. As we move and wrap up here, Asi, I think there's, you know, a lot of not-for-profits listening to being like, this sounds like something that maybe in 10 years we'll get to it. Like, how would somebody even begin to explore what a game would look like for their organization?
Yeah, so this is interesting. We had to deal with it for a while because we get 5 inquiries a week. People that come to us, large or small nonprofits, that say, you know, I want to make a game, or where do I even start? And what we did, we developed a methodology that I'm happy to share with you. It's obviously public, on how to approach it strategically. What are the right questions to ask? We call it the 8-step methodology. So we kind of condensed it to eight steps of what you need to define very well. And you know, we kind of guide nonprofits through that. Sometimes we actually work with organizations. I mean, we either direct them to the right places, like in matchmaking, or in some cases we even engage in some advising. And this is to say, you know, that you don't necessarily need to make a game to recognize that you need to add game thinking to the organization. And to unpack it, what I mean by that is that, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, I have nothing, let's make a huge game and it will take us a year, than to say, let's do a workshop, let's see, maybe we'll do something that just is about gaming elements added into something we already have. Maybe it's about just, you know, training our, you know, communication people in what games are and how to think about games. Our experience is whenever we did any engagement with a nonprofit, it was always coming back as, wow, you know, it's a whole world I never thought about, and I see so many connections to what we do, you know, beyond just thinking about making a new game.
Well, this is great. I think Games for Change is doing some amazing work and reminding not-for-profits working on, sometimes very serious causes that it's okay to use elements of fun to engage and access a new audience, bring it to deeper levels of engagement. Asi, I love what you're doing over there. Can you please finish with just how people find you online, how they reach you?
Thank you, George. I enjoyed the conversation. So, you know, it's pretty easy. It's gamesforchange.org. The festival would be gamesforchange.org/festival. And, you know, anyone should and could reach us by writing to our contact email. And, you know, we're very busy producing this festival, and a lot is going to happen there in April. But we're all year round really in the business of helping nonprofits to navigate this territory, you know. So that's what we're here for. Great.
Thanks, Asi.
Thank you so much, man.
Thanks, buddy.
Bye-bye.
All right, so if you're anything like me, you're now like, oh my gosh, I kind of want to go out there and create a game now. Let's go figure this thing out. And I ended the conversation with Asi there deliberately, saying like, look, how do we get started thinking about this? Because I'll be honest, you know, going out and creating a game is expensive. It's not just the initial startup cost of like, all right, let's figure out our gaming platform and the strategy and the impact modeling that says, all right, if you do, you know, a game experience like this, we'll get this type of result. It's not only that, but it's then the maintenance of it. You know, if you get into mobile gaming, are you ready for the different platforms? So I don't want to scare you off from this, but just say there's tremendous upside, but also go in with your eyes open. I strongly recommend talking to folks that have done it already. Go to this conference, look for the resources online. You don't just know what you don't know about this topic, because there's a lot of strength there. We'll have that discount that Asi talked about, that 10% discount, if you go to wholewhale.com/podcast and look for this episode, number 29. And you know what? Happy gaming for change out there. Hopefully this is helpful. Thanks for listening. This has been Using the Whole Whale. For more resources on today's show, please visit wholewhale.com/podcast and consider following us on Twitter @wholewhale. And thanks for joining us. And the festival will be from the 21st to the 23rd, and then on the 25th in New York City. Again, you can find some details on our site for this podcast, episode number 29, Games for Change. Hope you can make it.